Yeah, I'm here with the handsome Mr. Foster. He's 25 years old. He's a renowned poet and English teacher at a high school in East Los Angeles. So how are you doing today, Mr. Foster?
Very good. How do you know that the recording levels are okay?
Oh,
you can adjust that later.
Yeah, I can adjust it later. I'm a brown editor. It's okay. Yeah. All
right.
So have you been to like a lot of poetry slams over the years? Because I've seen videos on YouTube.
Not slams. Slams are contests where different poets competing against each other to beat each other out.
Yeah.
And I don't go to too many of those.
You don't go to too many of those?
No, not competitions.
So what were those things on YouTube where like you were reciting your poems from your book?
Different readings over the year. Some at universities, some in public venues. One at California Plaza, where they have a free summer program of summer live entertainment, and they made us perform for that.
So
are you gonna edit these things?
Yeah, okay. I have a suggestion for you. So you should do open mics, because when you're like for comedy, because when you're teaching class, you have really good comedic timing. Like, you should really use advantage of that. Like, I've noticed it. You just have the vibe. You have the public speaking. You have the timing down. You just need to go to an open mic and perform. I feel like you could do amazing.
Well, actually, being a teacher is partly performative. Definitely, it can't all just be about you having a doctorate and having all these great ideas and not being able to stand up in front of people and convey them. You definitely have to be standing in front of people, conveying your ideas and articulating them sort of on the spot and in time with whatever they're paying attention to.
Yeah.
So the doctorate and academic degree, that's not all you need.
That's true. So when I read your book, City of the Future, like in one of the early pages, there was a lot of numbers listed. And whenever I called them, I got redirected to like Washington D.C. and I was talking to like senators and like a lot of important people, and I was like, hey, so I just saw you in the City of the Future book, and they were very confused. They did not know what I was talking about. So why is that there? Because I saw like on the description, it was like, to save turtles, call this number, and I'm talking to Nancy from the Capitol.
From the senator's office, or from your congressional representative's office. Yeah, so all those phone numbers in the book, City of the Future, were from the congressional representatives. And yes, you were being redirected to direct your questions to them, because I think that they should pay more attention to their people.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. I'm surprised that they still have the same. When did you write that book? Like, was that like a long time ago?
Definitely like, 3 to 5 years ago.
3 to 5 years ago?
Yeah, definitely a number of years ago.
Okay. How long did it take to complete?
I'd say there are pieces in that book that range anywhere between like 5 to 10 years. 10 years?
10 years?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a really long time. Years.
Yeah, except, like I wasn't working on it every day, every day. It was more of a collection of pieces that were written over a period of years.
Yeah, I liked how like creative it was. I liked following, because I read the book, like I binged it. It was by my nightstand every day. Every night I was just reading Mr.
Good, I guess.
Mr. Yeah, because it was like it was a page turner, like you should be putting your own book. You should like have your class analyze and find the metaphors and.
Yeah, some professors do that. Some professors will make every student buy a $100 book. I don't do that.
Yeah, you could make a very good profit off that.
Yeah.
So like how
many other universities do that?
So how was the like the publishing process for your book with the Kaya Press?
Well, the publishing process is great. They've been publishing me long enough that they're friends of mine. So I know them personally. I can talk to them about my work, informally and formally, in whatever context we need to discuss the work. In fact, the editors do an invaluable job of editing and organizing the book itself, because I give usually my manuscripts that I give to the publishers are twice the amount of pages that occur in the final book. In books of 200 to 250 pages, I often give them a manuscript of 400 or 500 pages, and then they sort of clean it out and weed it out and eliminate what they think is a duplication or repetition of something, that something gets too repetitious, and they really basically improve the book.
Do you have like the final call to what goes out to the public? Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So they don't completely.
Yeah, you know. So like and anything like movies or CDs or whatever, there's outtakes, you know, like things that just get eliminated from the final product because they don't fit for one reason or another.
Okay. So how many of these books have you completed or published? Because since you have a relationship.
I published two with Kaya. I published two with another press. Yes.
So, Mr. Foster, are you working on anything currently, right now? Any books?
Yes. I have a novel out in June. Ooh. Called The East Los Angeles Dirigible Air Transport Lines.
So, that's pretty specific. What is that about?
That's the actual history of a fictional air transport lines company in East Los Angeles, its history in the 20th century.
Oh, okay. That's a very interesting time period. All right, so this question's a little personal. So how'd you meet your significant other?
How does that relate to
City of the Future? Because, you know, she's a very important person in your life, I'm assuming. So how did you meet this person?
We took a class together.
Oh, that, wow. Which class was it?
It was called Urban Ecology.
Urban Ecology.
So it was an ecology class, and it involved backpacking in the Sierras and hiking the Grand Canyon and backpacking other places in California.
Wow. So that's where you guys fell in love? If I may use that
word.
Sort of.
That's where I met her, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where the whole... You know, the whole ordeal started. Yes. Wow. So was this was in college? This was in college in California?
Yeah.
Which college was it?
Well, we were going to separate colleges.
Oh, okay. So you guys.
She went to Stanford and I went to Santa Cruz. And so, yeah, we were dating in the Bay Area. Why are you laughing?
No, because like the Bay Area is like, it's really expensive right now. I don't know how it was then.
It was cheaper.
Yeah, because like the whole...
It was cheaper, $100 a month.
What?
$100 a month.
Bay Area, $100 a month.
Exactly.
Wow, Silicon Valley, really.
If we had bought property in those days, we'd be millionaires.
Yeah, you really... $100.
But I always thought, you know, why would you buy anything when like rent's only $100 anyway?
Oh my God, and then Mark Zuckerberg and Apple and Google...
Came along and
destroyed the Bay Area completely. Yeah,
pretty much.
Yep, all the $200,000 salary engineers working there who can barely afford the Bay Area.
Yes.
Barely, yeah. Wow. No way.
So that's the way it used to be.
Yeah, $100 a month.
Yes.
Oh my God.
$100 a month per room, maybe $400 or $500 a month per house.
You probably can't even find that in like Wisconsin or something. Wow. So this is a question. So have the students you've taught over the years, have they like changed over time? Like just like generally?
No, I don't think so. I think students are somewhat similar. Definitely the times have changed and have gotten progressively harder over the years. I think students have it a lot harder than I did when I was a student.
Really?
For example, you know, going to a community college in those days cost about like $35, maybe $50 per semester at tops, but I think around $35. And then the Cal States cost about $100 a semester. So I think like we as students, and then there was more money also. They also gave you more money to pay for college. So my college years, I was given more money than I ever had in my life. Yeah.
Wow.
They gave me money for rent, for food. I mean, that was one of the appealing things about college for me, was that I've been reading and writing my whole life and studying. And now they're going to pay me. They're going to pay my rent. They're going to pay my food. They're going to give me spending money to do the same thing I used to do for free.
That is so rare these days.
Yeah.
It's insanely rare, because yeah. One college has offered me something similar to that.
Well, and that's all, great.
Huh?
That's great. Yeah, it's great to
get offered. Exactly. And all the other colleges that are accepting me and giving me like how much it's going to cost, it's not appealing at all. And it's just like, just because you just have the name, it's just not appealing, you know? That type of thing, like, you know, free education, free textbooks, free housing, that's probably the college I'm going to go to be honest. So, yeah.
No, that's absolutely the thing that you necessarily need to pay attention to. You gotta pay attention to those details. It is not worth having a 5-digit debt when you come out of college, because the economy is not going to make it feasible to pay off that debt.
No, I think it's gonna be 6 digits, not 5 digits.
Yeah, well,
it's gonna be pushing 6.
You have to totally limit the amount of debt that you can get into, because the economy is not gonna support you when you get out.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And like, finding a job is so much harder nowadays. It's insane. Like the requirements is, they want you to be like essentially the smartest student ever,
or have a bunch of experience.
Yeah, or what's it called? The word nepotism. You know what I mean? Like your dad works at his company.
So doing other things, you know, with your life while you're doing your studies is critical. You need to be able to be out in the world and see how it operates, and to have some idea that your education will apply.
Yeah, because expanding your horizon, it's very good, because if you're a good student and you have all that going for you, then that's beautiful. That's amazing. I know a lot of people.
Well, that makes employers, I think, and people who are looking at you for different opportunities, more confident that you can handle it and deal with it.
Yeah.
And
that's true. Yeah. So I saw in your book that you graduated from, or I don't know, from Iowa's Writer's Workshop.
Yes.
So okay. I've seen that place in films and shows all the time, and it has like a very competitive culture. Right. But that's like in right. Hollywood. Is it like that in real life?
Somewhat. Yeah. It somewhat. I mean, it ranks itself in the top two in the country. The other one in the top two is UC Irvine. Iowa often ranks itself number one. And I think a lot of the students go in there thinking that. A lot of the students go in thinking that if they get in the top-ranked college, that will immediately translate to some easy gig for them afterwards. But actually, colleges kind of don't work like that. They don't necessarily, just because you go to Harvard or you go, you know, to some top-ranked school, doesn't necessarily mean when you walk out of there with a piece of paper, that piece of paper is going to open up every door.
Yeah.
It really depends a lot more on the student and what they, you know, their capability and what they can actually do.
Yeah. It depends on how you apply yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't just sort of coast through school following the instructions and get good grades and have nothing else to show.
I like that, because I've seen a lot of students that, like, that's all they have to show for themselves is just...
Right, that they followed the instructions.
Yeah, like numbers on a paper.
They did what they were told. They waited. See, that's part of what that shows. Part of what a good GPA and nothing else on your resume shows is that you're a follower and you just followed the instructions. And, like, yeah. That's okay, but but usually people want more than that.
Because that's really not interesting, you know? Like, yeah. a lot of
it's not original, it's not creative.
Yeah, a lot of these top-ranked colleges don't want just, like, a like, a book-smart person. They like people who expand their horizon. Yeah. So, I remember the scene in the show, and they were in Iowa's Writers' Workshop, and they were, like, in a round table, like, sharing their stories and stuff. And then a lot of people had very, very, very good stories, but then this one girl who recently got accepted to the school, her story wasn't really that good, and after that, she just felt very, she basically got bullied in that school, because, like, her writing was just not
and definitely, up to par. Definitely, well, I think people get bullied in situations like that, not just for the quality of their writing, but they might be different as an individual. You know, people can, school, like anything, is a social situation, and people get bullied in different social situations for being different for one reason or another. I kind of saw that happening too.
Yeah, because I guess you just have to find the right college where you fit the best, where you belong.
Well, and I think you need to also be able to stand up for yourself and what you believe in and things. One student, for example, she was an African American woman, and she dropped out of Iowa midway because she felt like that she was getting criticism from a bunch of white students who couldn't relate to her, couldn't relate to her work, and had nothing positive to say about her work for that reason. Like, they couldn't say, she thought that they couldn't make constructive criticism about her work because they were racist. And that's a problem that not only Iowa, but and not only writing programs, but a lot of schools have those kinds of issues, and students, you know, students may have less of those issues in California because California is so diverse. But if you go to a state like Iowa, you may definitely have to deal with those kinds of issues.
Yeah, because, yeah, California is diverse. And Iowa, in that show, she was the only colored person there. And it was very alienating to her, because it's kind of uncomfortable, because you have to learn to adapt to Iowa.
Not only that, but you may not have any backup. You know, if you're the only person of color in an all-white classroom, you may not find a lot of support.
Yeah, like finding friends and anything is very hard in that situation. Yeah. I've been there, because in kindergarten I was the only brown person there, so I know how it is. So two of your students put this there, and it was Brianna and Katie. They said, why are they your favorite students? Why are they your favorite students?
Why are Brianna and Katie the favorites?
Yeah.
I think that every student has an opportunity to vote for themselves as the favorite student.
So, like,
and if they want to be the favorite student, I say, okay.
Okay. So a few students wrote in questions. So Leslie asked, why did you fail her?
Leslie did not fail. So I gave her an imaginary fail. I think that that she's too hard on herself.
Mm.
That she actually passed, and she's okay.
I think I've noticed that too, because my grade for your class wasn't too pretty, but I think I deserved what I got. I'll be honest. And this year, I'm not doing too hot either. I'm turning in late assignments.
What about that? What are you going to do about that?
I am going to improve that, for sure.
You're definitely not the worst.
Yeah, I know that. I'm not the best either. Yeah,
I know.
I know where I stand, but I know I have room for improvement. I know that for a fact. That late pile is probably all me, for all I know. But I'm not going to be there next grading period. I promise you that. But,
very good.
You know, things get overwhelming in life, and
really, what is your hardest class?
Okay, senior is not that hard for me. I took it pretty easy this year, I guess. Math for me, I guess, since I'm not too bright at math.
Was it pre-calc?
Yeah, but it's whatever, you know, it's procedural, you know, you'll get through it. But a lot of things outside of my life are just troubling me and stuff, you know. It's not that big of an issue. It's just I have a lot going on, family wise, stand-up comedy wise, podcast wise, you know. It's just,
which has a good side to it.
Yeah,
you know, part of showing that you're capable is juggling all these things and keeping them from crashing down on you.
Yeah, because I have,
so that's part of it. That's part of it for sure, you know. Yeah. That is part of being an adult, and taking responsibility for yourself. You are saying that it is your responsibility, and so that is totally an adult attitude, whereas some less mature students would say, you know, like, they would just push it off on other people. It's somebody else's. It's every they would just go down the line and blame each little thing on somebody themselves. Else.
Yeah, because your life is in your hands, you know.
Yeah.
But one fear I have is that, like, my biggest fear actually is that I'm never gonna reach my true potential, and I'm just gonna be a jack of all trades, but a master of none. I'm going to be an average student, average comedian, average pop, but I'm not going to excel in anything, you know? I'm not going to be a bright student or amazing comedian or top podcaster, you know? But, you know, I'm young and...
But I think that, I mean, you're doing a few things right. One is, like I said before, taking responsibility and being your own advocate, standing up for yourself, but doing, you know, taking responsibility for yourself at the same time. The other thing is being out there, but being sincere. Like, another student told me today that they were enjoying the presentation because they felt like it was real. They called it real, that it was real where the other ones were not, you know.
The Yale one? Or Russell Brand.
Than other things that I've shown them. But you know, and I think what they're responding to is just the sort of straightforward sincerity about, you know, like, the presentation.
That Yale presentation, it was pretty good. I saw some students tuning out to it a little bit, but yeah, it was pretty good. It engaged me. Yeah. So one question.
But I think, you know, like, I think if you have those questions about yourself and your future, if you deal with them sincerely, then you'll be on the right path.
Yeah, because,
you know, there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee, like, if you do these things, that's the three easy steps to success, and you'll have guaranteed success. Because, you know, life depends on luck. You have to have good luck to get everything. You know, certainly you're going to have bad luck sometimes and not get what you need or what you want. But if you deal with that sincerely, you'll be all right.
Yeah, because you're right about luck. Like, you're lucky that you met your future wife at a college.
Yeah, meeting anyone
could change everything.
It can change a lot of things, and it's totally dependent on luck.
Yeah.
Like, are two people in the same place at the same time? A lot of that is just luck.
Because if Woz and Jobs never met each other, then we wouldn't have that, you know? Just, yeah. Meeting someone could change your life.
Yes.
I definitely agree on that. And this is a question that Noah asked. Is that
Noah?
Have you ever had him as a student, Noah?
No.
White guy.
A white guy.
I call him that all the time. He doesn't get offended. So he asked, "Do you have any hobbies outside of literature?"
Sure. Being outdoors as much as I can. I spent I spent Thanksgiving break kayaking 100 miles in Baja.
Wow.
Although we only ended up kayaking about 50 miles because of storms blew in. But yeah, that was great. That's important. It's important to, you know, if you have a job that keeps you indoors and makes you deal with paperwork all the time, it's important to not have your face in paper and books and screens 24/7 because that's bad for your health.
It's very bad for, 'cause I remember that one project, like three things about ourselves and three other people. Like you mentioned you hiked a lot, like in Griffith Park and stuff. So I remember you doing that. Do you remember my project a little bit? I like mentioned two guys, a comedian and a filmmaker.
Yeah, you showed pictures of people.
Yeah, so the comedian, I worked with him for a paid stand-up spot after
outstanding.
Yeah, and there then the filmmaker, a few months ago, I had an acting role in a Hulu show. So, yeah, I spoke that into existence. I just had that in mind, just had a goal, and I just went for it. So
that is what you need to do.
Yeah.
That is the way to, like, proceed. A lot of people are shy about that, or they let their self-doubts sort of dictate to themselves. And you have to take the initiative. You have to stand up for yourself.
Yeah. You just have to do what you want to do, you know? Like, you just have to put your goal in front of you and you just have to chase it. Because if you don't, then, like, life isn't going to come to you, you know?
Not only is life not going to come to you, but people who are kind of passive about that can often later in life feel very dissatisfied with what they have done with their time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are following your desires and interests, I think whatever happens, you'll say that you took a shot at it and that, you know, good things have happened.
Yeah, good things have happened.
That there might have been some negative things that either happened or negative things that just didn't work out for you.
Yeah.
But still, like, you took a shot at it and good things happened.
Because I think of life in a way is that, like, when I'm on my deathbed or whatever, and I look back at my life, what am I going to regret? You know, what am I not going to regret? Like, do you have any of those things right now? Like, do you regret not doing something earlier?
No. I mean, I do have, like, curiosities. I was offered a job by the Seattle Fire Department
really?
That I worked for probably like 6 months. I trained for it. Wow. I took their tests. I came up high enough on the test to be offered a job. And then I opted not to do it because I felt like I needed to be more responsible at home and deal with home and family responsibilities. And I often wondered over the years, like, could have been interesting. I could, you know, would have been, I worked for it. I could have tried it out. And then if family responsibilities got in the way later, I could have, you know, dropped it or quit or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Foster, the firefighter, that would have been an interesting road to take in life.
It might have been okay.
Yeah. I could somewhat see you as that. For some reason. I don't know why. Wow, someone actually asked this. I feel so uncomfortable.
How many people did you get these questions from?
Most of them were me, and then some people just wanted to, wow. I'm going to ask
it. They saw that you were making these questions?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to ask it. So what's your income like, mister?
What's my income like?
Yeah, annual income.
Like an average teacher's income.
Oh, just an average.
Yeah.
Some teachers make different amounts of money depending on, you know, PhD, bachelor's,
right.
Master's.
Not a lot, though.
Oh, it's not that big of a hump?
No, like, PhD might get me 20 grand more a year.
That's pretty huge, though.
Actually,
that's a car.
Yeah, maybe to you it seems like a lot. It would put another zero on my income for the year, so that would raise me from five figures to six figure income.
So you're 20K away from six figures.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
pretty good.
Yeah, but that's pretty average though for a teacher who's worked for 30 years teaching.
Really?
My wife has about the same, she's a teacher. She has about the same number of years in the system. She makes 25 grand more a year than me because she works for a different district.
Okay. Because one of my my other teachers, he's pretty open about his income, and he said that LAUSD has like a very good retirement plan and investment plan and everything. Okay, wow, then.
But why? What does it matter?
Well, that's good. I can see why the teaching profession would be attractive. Not just because of that, but the financial incentives are pretty good. Yeah, that's better than I expected, not gonna lie, because people always complain about a teacher's salary and stuff.
But that's, you know, that's after more than 30 years of teaching, though.
So you had to rise up to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I started around 20. Come in, Denise.
So you, okay. So
give me the paper. Give me the paper.
So is that a daily six-period thing for you?
It's the weekly one. Yeah, there's students every week who have questions like that. But that's fine. You know, they're embarrassed to say those kind of things in front of the other people. They think the students are going to laugh at them or whatever. So then they're coming that sixth period to ask these questions.
How does your sixth period
confidence? You like people laughing at you professionally?
Yeah, I love it.
But they're shy about that. They don't want people laughing at them.
Really? Like, I'm not
really...
Why
don't they want people laughing at them?
I'm not really afraid to say anything in class. You've seen me, like, you know, doing my dumb...
Why don't they want people laughing at them? Why are they shy?
That's just not what they like in life, you know? Me, I just...
How come you're not shy about it?
I used to be very shy. I'm just not shy anymore because, like... Let's just say if I say a joke during class, what am I going to lose? You're going to say something like, Saeed, shut up. Or something like, oh.
I wouldn't say that
to
you.
Yeah, like, Saeed, be quiet or something. You know, I don't know. You know, stop turning in late work, Saeed, or something. I don't know. Stop bothering Richard. Oh, my. That picture from the 70s.
Picture from the 70s.
That I showed you, that you look like Richard. I'm like, no, I'm not going to lie. You do. You just have, like, you look like you play guitar for a living, and that's how you got your wife.
No.
So that hairdo, was that just the 70s hairdo or?
Yes.
Because I'm probably going to put it up on social media when I promote.
Put that up on social media.
All right. I won't.
The 70s.
I won't. Wow. So were those the roommates you were talking about when I asked you if you were a musician or not?
Yeah. Throughout college, there was always some college guy trying to be a rock star.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was sad.
Richard's going to make it. I believe in it.
He's too quiet. He didn't say anything.
Honestly, it's because, like, kids these days are, like, so emo, so I don't even know.
You think, well, maybe. You know. Maybe. There's quiet people who could do it, I guess. You know, because part of it is luck. Part of it is,
yeah, it is luck.
Maybe he'll be in the right place at the right time.
We need more Asian comedians. You need to just take a shot. Please. I'm tired of these white guys.
That's your job.
It is my job, but I'm just tired of these white guys talking about Tinder, Uber, Donald Trump, politics. I'm tired. I want an English teacher. I want a poet doing some comedy up there. Asian poet. I need it.
I'll look for you.
America needs it.
Let me know when your YouTube videos are up. Do you have YouTube videos up?
Yeah, but
you,
like...
You already do?
Yeah. But I'm going to be posting a lot more stand-up this year because I just started last year and I'm just starting to get comfortable now. Right. Yeah, because larger crowds and...
Yeah, don't be too critical about on yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah, I'm going to throw everything as long as I, like...
Well,
I don't...
you know, if you're doing it and you're up there, like, don't be too hard on yourself. Use it as a learning experience.
Yeah, like, it's been a lot of trial and error, you know, like, learning... For like, as a poet, do you have to read the room a little bit and, like, you know?
Definitely, it's about that. I mean, sometimes I have a set idea about what I want to do in advance.
Yeah.
But usually that set idea is altered or changed by whoever's in the room, whether they're older or younger, whether they're, like, jaded or they're interested, you know, whether they're paying a lot of attention or half of them are on their devices.
That happens in comedy. So I can see how they're similar. Yeah, like reading room, going through with the set, and when I see the crowd, I'm like, yeah, that joke is not going to work well with this crowd, so I just take it out of my head. Yeah.
And you know, like you talked about timing. Part of it is about rhythm and timing.
Yeah,
you cannot just like insert some kind of line or remark at a random time. It has to be at a time when the reading of the room makes it fit.
Because like I could give you Dave Chappelle's lines, I could give it to you and you could read them out loud and it won't be funny. It works.
That's right.
The performer.
And it's not like the line is somehow magic and special by itself.
No, it takes a lot of practice. Like, I've had the same joke that I've performed in like two different comedy clubs. One completely bombed, and then the other just everyone was clapping. Everyone was telling me like, "Yo, that's smart. I like that." And they were different rooms, and that's just how it works.
That's right.
Yeah.
And reading the room has to do with timing. I think, you know, it is about rhythm of presentation. You just can't like have crappy rhythm and just like random presentation.
I thought about it and I was like, teachers essentially have a free open mic.
Right. That's right.
And they have a good engaging audience who has to listen to the speaker.
So there is some resistance because they have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, there is some resistance. But I feel like if you practice on your students, like I know you haven't intentionally tried, but I've seen you and you have what it takes. I'm not going to lie. So if you just try like some comedy bits on students, you know, I feel like you could nail it, you know.
I do it in the writing.
Yeah, you do it in the writing. Yeah, I mean, you should just try it. I feel like I can see you. You're gonna.
You do it.
That's honestly how I treat like class presentations nowadays. It's just.
It is an opportunity.
Yeah, right.
You have an opportunity, but you know what? That's the positive way to see it. So, like, I have to tell you, the majority of students, what do they think about a presentation?
It's just work.
It's just work.
And it's always the same bland. Like, no one comes out with creative energy.
They don't think of it as this opportunity to, like...
display your creativity.
Yeah, do something creative.
And it's always, like, the same PowerPoint with bullet points. Yeah, it's like, oh, Jack Kirk,
you know what? If they respond to you... it's an affirmation of your creativity. It's when you show that to them, it is also like showing them that they could do it.
Yeah.
That they could do something different.
Anyone can. Yeah. Like you totally have the room, and when you get the response from the audience, that like dopamine rush, that like it's like, oh, yo, my work did that. That's amazing, you know? And like I think that's beautiful. I was looking at that for, is that a Miss Stanford Grand Canyon there?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, wow. You made that custom calendar?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Next one. Oh, yeah.
You should put the 70s Richard picture in there, too. For like 420 or something. Wow, okay. So, who asked this?
So we're good.
Almost. We're almost there. Kayla asked, why do you hate teenagers these days?
Kayla?
Kayla Perez.
Wait, what? Carla?
No, not Carla. Not from my period. I guess she never had you as a teacher. Huh. Wow, that's weird. Noah and Kayla, they're in a relationship.
Why do I hate teenagers?
Yeah, like...
I people... totally do not hate teenagers. I like teenagers.
Really?
Yeah, they're goofy.
Okay.
And honest. And I think that teenagers are more interesting than many adults, because many adults feel like they're not going somewhere and they have given up trying to go somewhere and they've given up like trying to be their best person. And trying to develop into some, you know, build some new life. Where I think teenagers are 99% of the time about that. They're about being, you know, developing into some new person and building some new life and going different places, and that kind of energy is been great to be about, to be around that kind of energy every year, as opposed to like some adults that I know who they feel like their life is over. After high school, their life is over. After college, their life is over. They don't need to like try anything new. They don't need to do anything new. They don't need to they're at their level.
And then they go to their deathbed and they start regretting kind things. Of. Yeah, I've seen that. And that leads into the next question, is like, what do you want to do in the future? What are some things you haven't tried that you just want to do in the future?
Well, partly I'm always about seeing new ways that my writing and my teaching can be used to help other people. I mean, I'm always, next month I'll be going to the University of Texas in San Antonio, so I'll miss a couple days of next month to go give lectures there. Mm-hmm. So people invite me to different things, but I'm also interested in developing projects that could help other people. I give a free writing workshop at Alhambra High School last semester for undocumented students. And so Alhambra High School has a Dreamers Center that is a quote unquote safe place for undocumented students. And we gave them a writing and art workshop. And they have a food pantry there. So if the students have food insecurity, they can get food if they need it. They have a supply pantry so that they can get supplies if they're short on money and they need supplies. So they have all these resources that they organize for students, and I wanted to use writing to support that, because if LAUSD was serious about it, the emotional health and emotional security of its own students, it would be providing those services to the students as much as it could.
So you want to use your writing ability to help people in the future. Yeah, that's a great thing to do. So I have taken a lot of your time up today, and it's your sixth period conference.
Well, I hope you edit that thing.
Oh, no, there's a lot of editing that I need to do. Yeah.
Cut it,
make it tight, make it nice.
Yes.
Standard paragraph format.
Yes. Put some indentations in there.
Yeah, put some dramatic irony in there. Okay. Connotation, denotations.
Music by Richard.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you heard his music?
I've been.
Is his music okay?
That's why I'm telling you, like, it's not bad at all. Like, that's why I keep hyping it up. Like, it's pretty good. He's actually talented. I think he has what it takes. Everyone has what it takes.
They do, you know, but you know what? I gotta say, having taught writers, you know, my whole life, and in grad school much of the time, and been a student myself, that it's not about talent, it is about perseverance.
Mm.
You know, out of 100 talented people, only a few are gonna be writers, because they're the only ones who stick it out. And that's true with a lot of things, that a lot of people, they have great talents, but they're not going to do it because it involves sacrifice. Mm. And many people are not willing to sacrifice that much for some abstract future goal. Like it's out there in the future, too far away to have any guarantee for, so they're not going to sacrifice for something that might happen.
I think people definitely need to take risks in their life.
That's part of it. It's like, it's a risk.
Yeah, it is a risk. And I feel like at my age, I can take a lot of risk and be
it's
fine.
It's true. That is the great thing about
being young,
about youthful energy. Like, you can do all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
And still have time.
You have all the time in the world. And I feel like a lot of students haven't taken advantage of that yet, and it's going to hit at a time that they're going to regret, I feel like. So I hope this podcast goes out to a lot of the students of your class and all people around the world. Actually, a lot of people listen to this around the world. So yeah, Mr. Foster is one of my favorite teachers this year, if not my favorite. And you can find his book, City of the Future, and many other books on Amazon.com. Is there any other place it's available, Mr. Foster?
Sure. Roman's Bookstore in Pasadena, Skylight Bookstore in Los Feliz on Vermont Avenue. Check your local bookstore.
Yeah, check your local bookstores or just Google City of the Future like I did and gave money to Mr. Foster straight into his pocket, whatever he gets from his publisher. And he has various YouTube videos of his poetry recitations in the public, and they're actually very good, very engaging. So if the students of Mr. Foster did not know about that, please check that out. He's a creative, handsome genius, and he could have been a firefighter.
Thank you, Saeed. Good luck. Good luck, Saeed.
And thank you, Mr. Foster, for taking about an hour of your day to help me do this podcast. I hope all of you listeners enjoyed, and leave a rating down below and buy Mr. Foster's book.